Okay, turn to Exodus chapter 11. Exodus chapter 11, we're going to continue our series on Moses. We'll kind of, from time to time, come back. I predict this will be a long series, so I won't do it every week. Exodus chapter 11, let me get, Dave Fink is going to read our main verse in a minute, which is Exodus 11, verse 8 and 9. Brian Dubois, Ephesians 4, 26. And I think that's all for now. In the story of Moses, you have the 10 plagues, so he goes back 10 times to, at least 10, to Pharaoh, let my people go. No, I won't let them go. So it's actually a picture of life and ministry that involve a lot of frustrations. So this would be very frustrating to have to go back again and again, and this guy will not relent. And in the text that we're going to read is that the Bible says he became very angry. This is a part of life, and in fact it is a part of ministry, is you are going to get angry, but you have to respond to anger correctly if you want to be a man of God on any level. So today's lesson is called Wisdom in Anger, and let's read Exodus 11, verse 8 and 9.
And all these your servants shall go down to me and bow down to me, saying, get out. And all the people who follow you, after that I will go out. Then he went out from Pharaoh in great anger, but the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh, will you not heed you, so that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt?
Okay, wisdom and anger. Let's talk about the reality of anger. Life and ministry, they are emotional. They do involve emotions. It's not just facts. It's not just data that you put into your mental computer. Things will happen that they will affect you emotionally. Verse 8, he went out from Pharaoh in great anger. He was ticked off in dealing with this frustration. If you haven't learned this about life, life has many things that will go wrong. Life has many things that will fail to go right, and you would be, we would worry about you if that never affected you emotionally, because God created you with emotions. Ministry, I'm using the life of Moses because he's actually a picture of, you say, I want God to use my life, okay? We're looking at Moses, and one of the things we're seeing is that ministry is filled with irritations, it is filled with disappointments, and it's even filled with violations. That's you minister to people, there are things that are irritating. I would love nothing more than to just be able to work on sermons and preach and inspire men for the rest of my life. You got irritating things like, why are they doing it? Why do we have to mess? Okay, all right, we got to deal with it. Disappointments, I really want this to happen. That's what Moses is doing here. I really, really want the people to go. It doesn't work out. And even violations, you'll have people, there are people, they say bad things about me. Me, can you imagine that? So a common emotion in life is anger. The Bible says he went out very angry. The word, it's a great word here in the original Hebrew. Anger, it means two things. The two main parts of the original Hebrew word, number one, is it means to burn. There's a fire on the inside. But the other thing is it means to breathe through the nose. You ever see that? That's a great picture. So Moses, it's not just information. Oh, you're not going to let. He is burning mad about this. And so anger is an expression of dislike. It doesn't have to be dislike for a person, although it can be. It means I am not happy with the current situation. Right? I don't like what's going on. And so This is very common that there are things that will make you angry. Ephesians 4:26.
Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger.
Okay, his translation, be angry. I think the NIV says, when you are angry, don't sin. So, of course, some of you in your background, I'm angry, so I, you know, smash somebody. That's, you understand that's wrong. The Bible says you will get angry. It's a recognition. You will. There's no one here that you don't get angry. And then, of course, we could do a whole thing on anger. Some people, it's you are an eruptor or a stuffer. There are people, they will never yell. They will never attack anybody, but they're just as angry. They just hide it. Then they make snide remarks and make people pay, etc. Anyway, that's a whole lesson in itself. There is actually a place in life, this is what our text shows us, there's actually a place in life and ministry for healthy anger. There is such a thing as healthy anger. I know many of you here, you've struggled, you have gotten yourself into trouble with unhealthy anger. The Bible says there is healthy anger, which is what we're reading here. Anybody know what we call healthy anger? It's righteous indignation. That's exactly right. So in other words, you are upset for the right reasons. So righteous indignation is getting upset at the right people for the right reasons in the right way. That's very important. So my point so far, very simple, you will get angry. You got to make sure you get angry with the right people for the right reasons in the right way. So Moses, in this instance, he is upset on behalf of suffering people. These people are getting beaten. They're living as slaves. That bothers him. You cannot be a healthy man of God unless there are things that do bother you. It has to bother you that people are going to hell. That's righteous indignation. And he is also upset for the will of God. There are things that God has promised and they have not come to pass. That should bother you. God, this is in your word. I want this. So that's true. So righteous indignation is emotional. It still has the same. You burn on the inside. You might breathe through the nose, but it produces healthy results. The reality of anger. Let's talk about incorrect anger. Most of us, we don't spend a lot of time in righteous indignation. Our problem is that we have unrighteous indignation. We have unhealthy anger, so we make mistakes. Mistake number one, you can get angry at the wrong people. I teach and preach pastors this. They have to learn this. You come to church and you're upset at all the people who didn't show up to church that night. So you're mad and you preach and you're blasting all the people that are there. That doesn't make sense. They're bad. I see bad. We're here. That's a mistake. Getting angry at the wrong people. Mistake number two is allowing your anger to spill over onto the wrong people. This is a little bit different than actually being mad at them. That's mistake number one. Here, you're angry at someone or something, so now that spills over onto people you should not be upset at. We have people in life, in church sometimes, that comes to my attention. This guy, man, they're lashing out. And they're getting in confrontations. Okay, but I understand something as a pastor. That person who's lashing out at this one or that one, it's probably not this one or that one that they're actually even upset with. They are probably still mad at somebody else, or sometimes they're mad at themselves. But what happens is that anger now spills over in every other relationship. And that just doesn't work. I remember years and years ago reading a story about a man that he was having a nightmare. He had been in the Vietnam War and would suffer flashbacks. In the middle of the night, he woke up and he was choking his wife at night. And he said, in my dream, all I could see was the Viet Cong. Right? So the past, now he's taking out his wife. She's not attacking him. So you let it spill over. It is a very common mistake. So some of this you can write down for the future, but a very common mistake of those in ministry is they let life and ministry frustrations, they let it spill over into their marriage and their family. They're mad at people in church. What they would really like to do is tell them off, take them out back, but they can't. So they're burning, breathing through the nose, but when they come home, that anger spills over. They're snapping, they're angry, and that just doesn't work. Third thing, you can allow anger to damage your credibility with God's people. We know that later on, Moses actually lost the last part of his destiny because he didn't handle anger correctly. I didn't hand that out. Numbers 20:10-11. Go ahead and read.
And Moses said, Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank.
Okay, so here it's at this point, then God steps in and says, "You're not going into the promised land." So, you know, I have sympathy for Moses. And some of you can't relate. File this, it'll make sense one day. But he finally just has enough. Like, I am sick to death of these stinking people complaining. You want water? I'll give it. He's smacking the rock. And so he loses credibility. I know of, on at least one occasion, we had a pastor that had to be removed because he got mad at the people and got in a big altercation with somebody in the congregation in the parking lot and cussed out his whole church. So that's just not going to work. That's not going to work if you're doing that Wednesday night and then Sunday morning. Open your Bibles. I'd like to. And his pastor correctly said, "You are done. You have lost credibility." Why? Because of anger. You're frustrated with people. And so, lesson in life, it's really hard for people to respect you if you can't control your anger. Okay, so that you got to learn that. Fourth thing is you can allow anger to cause damage with unbelievers. We need to notice in this text, Moses was very angry at Pharaoh, but he didn't tell Pharaoh what he thought of him. Now that might have been because Pharaoh had an army. That might be a simple reason why. If Moses had told Pharaoh exactly what he thought of him, that would have caused their problems to be worse. He needed Pharaoh to let the people go. He needed Pharaoh to be in a position where he could say, "You can go." So he's very angry, but it is very noticeable he doesn't take it out on the unsaved person. He doesn't let Pharaoh feel the wrath of his anger. So this is what we call testimony. Some of you right now, you work jobs. I predict on your job there are a few irritating people you work with. I predict that you had customers that irritate you, right? You have unreasonable customers. Funny story, when I was an apprentice years ago, we would go out to, we had housing commissions, so it's a real poverty area. And a broken sliding door, so we fix it. Well, when we get back, we realize it was a brick house. It had been made totally out of square. So we get back and, you know, so the frame leaned. Well, we were given the door. We fit the door. We only cut glass square, right? We bring back, so it had a gap at the bottom, and this guy started screaming and yelling that the door was out of, it's like the frame. Come on, this has been here for 20 years. And he's blaming it. He was an English guy. He's like, it's free 30 tooths. It's free 30 tooths out. You know? And I was young and dumb, and this guy kept going. So my boss, he was a very calm man. He came out, he had a camera, and so the guy started lipping him, and he's saying that, yeah, you're taking a picture of that camera. He said, that's a lousy camera. You should have bought a box brownie. I mean, that was the original camera that you could buy. He just kept on, and I finally had enough of this guy. And so I said, listen, have you got a box brownie? Well, his wife was chopping onions around the corner with a kitchen knife, and she came running out of it, running at the knife. I said, my mouth is going to get me in trouble. This is not good. Okay. So it was a good thing that I didn't tell him that day. By the way, I go to the potter's house. My point is that you can damage your testimony. I was witnessing with a guy on the Prescott Plaza one day, and as often happens, he handed a guy the flyer, and I can't remember if he lipped him or if he screwed up the flyer. He couldn't handle that. So he's like, yeah, well, hell's hot, pal. You got to burn in hell. That's just not helpful. That's not helpful in the larger picture. Talk finally about winning over anger. It is very important here to get perspective about anger. How did Moses survive his anger? And I think that is, he got perspective in advance. So one of the things in the running in the background of the story is God tells him, go to Pharaoh, tell him to let my people go, do the sign. But God said, but he's not going to respond. That is very, very important. So if you want to win over anger, one of the things that has to happen is you have to be realistic. Some people, when things go wrong in life, it's like they're shocked. They were rude. They're people. Life didn't work out. That's right. That's how life works. Life won't always go well. People will disappoint you. People will frustrate you. You have to factor that in. You cannot sit there and be spun out. How could this possibly be happening? That's why God told him in advance, listen, he's not going to respond. Part of surviving and winning over anger is you have to surrender your pride. I like you all, but you're not so special that you're not going to have problems in life. And this is often like, how dare you pull into my lane? Right? There are people, they're always on edge. Are you looking at me? Everything is, they're this is probably rejection-based, but that's pride. Pride is the root of much anger. Okay? It's nothing more than pride. You are insulted. You are offended that life could go wrong. So, you want to win over anger? Be realistic. Number two, Moses spoke to God. Verse 9. I give that out. And it says, but the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh will not heed you, so that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. This is now speaking to God after the fact. So Moses is angry, and then he and God are having a conversation, which we call that prayer. That's very important. You can rage privately. You can rage to your wife. Big mistake. Proverbs says, you get around another angry man. You know what they did to me? You get the wrong person, they go, let's go sort them out. That's not good. What does he do? He goes and he talks to God. One of the things you have to learn in life is you have to leave troubling people and troubling situations with God. That's ultimately what Moses said. God, you're the only one who can sort Pharaoh out. So I am not going to go home and snap at my wife because Pharaoh's a jerk. You have to sort him out. That's what prayer gives you, that perspective. Third thing about anger is an indicator. Any of you that have cars, you have lights on your dashboard that will light up when something is wrong. One of those is the temperature gauge. The temperature light, whether it's a gauge that goes up, whether it's a light that comes on. If the temperature light ever comes on in your engine, stop. Something is wrong. Had a man years ago, a missionary, we gave him his fine new vehicle, and he said, I was on my way home after church, and the engine light came on. And so what did you do? He kept driving, and the engine stopped. So we waited a while, and he actually said, so we waited a while, and we prayed, and then the engine started. Engine light's still on, but he kept driving. When we took that vehicle to the mechanic said, in all my years, I have never seen a head that is so warped from heat. The light was warning him, and he wouldn't stop driving. Still makes me angry. Dear Lord, I don't. This is back when Noah got off the boat. It cost us $5,000 or $6,000 that engine. Dear Lord. Anyway, for me, anger is like that. Anger is a warning light. When I start getting irritated and snappy with my wife, that is an indicator that something is wrong in here. Sometimes my wife will have to say, I'm not the enemy. That's a warning light. You're right. Something is wrong. So that means often what that is that I am totally depleted. I travel, I'm jet lagged, so I'm exhausted physically. I've been making sermons. I've preached a bunch of times. I answer questions all day long. I come back home. I am drained, so I start snapping at other people, get irritated at them. That's not good. I got to fix that. So I need to stop. My answer is, I need to just spend time with God. I need to relax. I sit down and I read my Bible a lot. And then, of course, pray. Talk to God. Because what's going on inside will affect the outside. You have to learn that. That is a very important lesson in life. So you have to show wisdom in anger. Okay, let's open for questions then. Something you want to ask about anger, first of all, then we can move wider than that.
You ever intentionally show signs of anger at key times when working with disciples so they know that this is not okay?
Yes. Yeah. But that's yeah, so number one, it doesn't mean that I don't get angry, believe me. So in, you know, there's two different things. I may get angry. The things that make me angry are when it affects other people. Right, it's not just, you know, there weren't spoons to stir the coffee. What? How can it? That's, you know, I mean, it's often there are people that are doing things that hurt other people or can affect us badly. That's what you get angry about. The second thing about anger, I may show anger. That shows how serious something is, but I don't have to be personally insulting. There is a difference. I can be very angry at someone. Don't you ever do that again, and I'll explain why, because this hurts people. But I don't have to say, what kind of moron, who's your mother, I don't need to personally insult. That's not, you got to control your mouth when you're angry. And then, of course, I have used anger sometimes as shock therapy to, disrespectful church kids. I have done that, and that's very rare, because, they get used to being disrespectful of the house of God. So I've used anger deliberately. I let them know that I'm upset. But I'm trying to make a point. I'm trying to shock them so that they won't live that way. I'm trying to help them. Yeah.
And an uncertainty of the proper approach, in certain circumstances, especially being new at this or young at this, the default, should it be simply to leave things unaddressed with the person and take it up with God or with your pastor, when, in other words, you know that this is what they're doing is wrong or not the best, and it's frustrating to you, but you don't really know how to approach that situation? Is it better to simply...
Well, there's a whole range of things. So issue number one, there's many things that could be discussed if you had a healthy discussion. If you approach it in a resolution. Many people are just no good at having difficult conversations because they immediately make it a war. Because they start off angry, they start off insulting, they assume too much, so the conversation doesn't go well. You can have difficult conversations with people if you can get them on side. So that's number one. There are things that are, this isn't working in the band when you show up an hour late. Well, that's not something you just leave with God. You got to talk about that, right? There are things that are happening in ministry. This is not, probably almost every concert director I've ever had. They at some point, there are bands or drama. They're not praying. They're not doing something they should be doing. And so, what do you want to do about it? They often, let's have a meeting so I can yell at them. And that's never going to work, especially in an older church. So I often say, do you think that the people who are irritating you, do you think that they got together and said, I want to, let's make, Pastor Greg's life misery today? No, they often are unaware. So if you can have a healthy conversation, if you know how to start it wisely, and I teach people this, I need you to help me with something. Right? That's a way of entering a difficult conversation. Without, what kind of moron would do that? That's probably not a good entry. That conversation is never going to go anywhere well. So you start it well. You have have you considered, did you see that tonight no one got saved in the concert? And did you see that how there weren't people in prayer? You don't want to waste your time, right? I need you to help me with this. Let's be in prayer. That's an approach. So that's number one. Number two, there are things that are, they're not worth it. It doesn't matter. It just personally is irritating, but it doesn't change the world. And so, I it's like this. I get people like, that guy bugs me. How old is he? 75. What are the chances that a 75-year-old man is going to change today? I mean, he can, but realistically, so what you want to talk to them about is its personality. This guy's grumpy. If he's 75 and he's grumpy, he's probably going to die grumpy. I would be wasting my breath, right? You get it? So I'm giving you an extreme example, but there are things, that's just personality. Don't worry about it. That's just my pride. I shake hands with people at the door. I have people through the years that have, they say things that are actually irritating and mildly insulting at the door. I don't worry about it. That's their personality, right? The lesson that I have taught many of you at breakfast is the little boy who complained about the donkey that braided him every time he passes going to school. And finally, he complained to his grandpa, and his grandpa said, he's a jackass. Consider the source. So there are jackass people. They're not going to change. Don't sweat it. They're not hurting anybody. It's not like they're ruining the church. We can't, you know, the atmosphere. They're just mildly irritating. Everybody knows they're a jackass. Move on. Then you have, there are things that need to be dealt with, but you better do it in the right time. Right? I have people that are rebellious, for instance, but there's an intertwining because of their influence with how many people. You know, I get this. A pastor calls me, I got a guy, he's being very rebellious, but he actually, his family and the people he's won, that's 2/3 of the church. Well, you better handle that very wisely. They need to be dealt with. You better handle that wisely. You better do a lot of praying first. And I pray, God expose them, God heal them. You know, you deal with this, sort it out, let it be the right situation. Then I can speak. So there's a lot of different ways. There's not just one way to handle that. So that's why you need a pastor. You bounce things by and you form a template. Oh, that's how I handle that type personality. This is how I handle that situation. This is a deal with it with a kind conversation. This is a deal with it right now and lay down the law. This is a wait until God deals with it situation. So there's a lot of different ways. There's not just one way. But at the end of the day, in all of those, you can't let anger ruin your chances of being able to resolve it in that. Scott.
Recently, I had a conflict where I wanted to bring the problem to someone's attention in a right manner, but I ended up snapping on them at a completely different moment.
Yep.
And part of the reason I was kind of hesitant in the first place on talking to them about it was because I feel as though right now I'm not ready. What would probably be a wise thing to do?
Yeah, sure.
If I see the issue, I want to help if I can, but I don't feel as though I'm mentally ready to take it head on.
Yeah. So then you're wise to wait. That's what you should do. You don't lose. In most situations in life, you don't lose by waiting. There are very rare situations you need to be dealt with immediately, but a lot of things, it's just a matter of letting it go over time. So, and there's, I can tell you of so many different things. You imagine part of youth, when people are young, they say and do dumb things. They will grow up. That's why my wife and I don't take seriously. We don't make a federal case out of young people who say dumb things. Because we were dumb. We were young and dumb. We know what that's like. Let it go over time. I've seen God heal people just over time. They grow up and they learn that that's not an acceptable way. Then I've seen people that God, I pray for them miraculously. There are people in the church that they at one time were extremely against me. They were very irritating to me. But God's done a miracle, and now apparently they're my fans. So I let God deal with that. So you shouldn't rush, and you don't have to deal with everything in life. So that's what you just said there. That's a caution. I'm not ready, so don't do it. Just wait. Pray.
So there are times when I'm parenting my kids and I'm at work or, you know, busy with work, but then there's times where I'm home and really, like, the most of the time I'm with them, they're doing, you know, something naughty. I have to intervene.
Yeah.
And show that anger, so that righteous indignation in a way.
Yeah.
But then it's like that's the limited time I have with them, is, you know, that dealing with it. Is that... And yeah, like, you know, you try to balance that, show them love and affection when you can, but at the time when it's just a busy week, you're just going. Is there times, though, as a pastor, it's similar to where, like, you feel like, you know, you have limited exposure to your congregation.
Yes.
And there's times, like, so is there a way to...
Yeah, you have to deal with things as they come. So I have shovel days, shovel weeks, where all I'm doing is shoveling stuff all week long. And that's just the way it is. I don't want to do that. It just has to be done. Same with parenting. It just has to be done. You can't not discipline your children because I have limited time and I want us all to have fun and give hugs. They just have to be disciplined. You got it. When they arise, I can't ask my children to Could you schedule your naughtiness? You know, next Tuesday is looking okay for me. You know, it doesn't work. And that's true in church. There are times where I've got a million, you got to imagine, you know, people overseas know they can call me very early in the morning. By the time I come to church, I can have dealt with a few world crises by the time I get here. Then again, did you know this guy is like, great. I really don't want to have to even think about this. It just has to be done. That's just the way life is. So, yeah, got to work it out. I've tried getting people to schedule their crises, but they won't do it.
So you talked a lot about dealing with your own anger. Have you ever had to deal with somebody else's anger, where
they're
exploding or whatever, and it's causing problems? How do you handle those situations?
Well,
without getting angry yourself.
Well, so the issue is in our. Everybody has a right to feel safe, okay? So you, in our church, you can't threaten people with violence and still keep coming. That's just not going to work. So we have people that we lay down the law. If you ever do that again, you're not going to come. You balance it. There are people that he's a pipsqueak and he's just mouthing. And then there are people that they're like, you know, they were a serial killer before. We're going to take that seriously if they are threatening people. But yeah, you have to confront. We had a guy that years ago, as I had only just been here, and I arrived 2004. There's a guy that his whole life, he is used to, he can't just say, I don't like this, can we sort it out? His default is, I'm going to smash somebody. So he did that. I just got here. He had like several of the, every time he would come and bring anything he didn't like, he would always, because I'm going to smash him. And so I had been here just a short amount of time, and he came another time, something he didn't like, and he had a history of violence, and he said, and I'm going to smash him. And I say, and if you ever say that again, that'll be the last day you come to this church. And he's like, he was shocked, because that's normal for him. We don't operate like that. People here have a right to feel safe. You will never say that again and come to our church. Yeah, so you got to confront people.
What do you do, or how do you fix it? Do you respond unhealthy?
Yeah.
Anger to either somebody on the job or in your church? I mean, what
no matter what, you have to fix it. So you fix it with your wife. I've apologized to my wife. I probably apologized to my daughter. Once in a building program in South Africa, I snapped at a girl in the building supply place, they're a sinner. I went back and apologized to her. That was not okay. You know, I've done it with people in church. So, in most instances, most people. Now, if you're cussing them out or you punch somebody, that's different. That's you're on another level. But most people, if you respond in humility, most people will respond with you. In that's often a fixable thing. So if you run your mouth, if you got angry and you were dumb, say so. What hurts people is they won't admit it, right? They're just going to go on like everything is normal. So you got to learn to humble your pride. Part of that is apologizing, acknowledging the way I spoke to you is not okay, and I'm going to do my best and not do that again. Please forgive me. So that's what I have done in that. Fortunately, I don't think I've ever cussed anybody out or punched anybody so far.
Yeah.
Devin.
How do you gain the ability to switch it off? For instance, you know, you're counseling somebody that needs that, you know, righteous indignation. The next person that comes up, maybe the exact opposite they need to hear.
Yeah, you know, pastoring is a gifting. That's why, you know, this is it's supernatural. God gave gifts to men. One of those is pastor teachers, but the word gift is also a word that's used for supernatural. This is a sideline. I'll throw this in for free. There are churches that they involve their council in counseling. And I tell pastors, are you crazy? That's not fair on them. They don't have the supernatural gifting for that. Our counsel is involved on very rare, extremely limited. So it's a gifting. So I can I can deal with the worst problems and I can file it away and say it's time to function. Now, I've gotten better at that over time. You might not be good at that in the beginning, but you learn that. As far as, yeah, and let's clarify, it's in counseling. Many of you here, I've counseled probably, I don't know any of you that I've ever counseled and had to get angry at you. It's very rare that I have to get angry with someone. You know, and if I'm really getting angry, at that point I will close down. This is not gonna be healthy. So there are people that I've said, I'm done. We're not gonna continue this conversation because I'm about to use words that pastors shouldn't use. So it's over. We're not gonna do this anymore. So I can't help you. So you gotta learn that. It's very rare that I would ever deliberately show anger. And there are people that are irritating to me. You know, a few years back, I had somebody that they were pushing my buttons, man, and I was getting wound up, and I deliberately said, stop, okay, wait, explain to me why this is, I want you to tell me why, what is it you're afraid of? Because I was getting irritated, I was about to lay down the law, and I said, why are you acting like this? What are you afraid of? And when they told me, they said, we're afraid that you are going to write us off and never give us a chance again. I said, ah, okay, now I get it. And it was a good thing that I asked that question because I was about to tear their heads off. But when I understood that, I said, okay, so now we apparently come from different backgrounds. So in my world, when I did something wrong, my father laid down the law, I was punished. And then a short time later, he gave me a hug, and it was finished. He never reminded me about it again. If you acknowledge what you did wrong here, it's over. I will never bring it up again. I reassured them. So that's kind of a situation where I stopped my... That I was getting angry, but I said, instead, I want to find out, why are you making me so angry? Help me to understand this. Yeah. Good.
Johnny. One of the books that you recommended was Verbal Judo.
Uh-huh.
Dealing with anger, angry people.
Yep.
That would help me with that book.
Yeah, excellent. There's other books, but that's true. That's written by a policeman. He said he was angry and caused himself lots of problems. So the idea is learning how to deal with difficult people, angry people, yes. That's helpful. So it's a skill. And the problem is people have no relational skills. They were raised in dysfunction. What do? When we're mad, we scream, we yell, we come to blows, we stab people, and that's normal. That's not a workable pattern in life. So you gotta learn to get good at it. You're gonna have conflicts. You might as well get good at it. That's the bottom line. You gotta practice. That's why some of you think your wife is a witch. Maybe God's just helping you practice. Maybe you are the witch. Another sermon. Okay. Anybody else? Good.
So you asked them, what are you afraid of? Was that revelation? Was that a skill learned?
I think it was God helping me, yeah. Jesse and I talk about this sometimes. Is I get a counseling situation, it's the I'm in hell moment, and like, oh my God, how are we gonna? And I'm praying under my breath, you know, right. I am praying, God, you have to help me here. This isn't going well. How can I help them? And that's because I pray all the time for wisdom. Yeah, it just dropped into my head. Mm-hmm. This is a weird. It was weird. I thought we were, and it's winding up and winding. I'm like. So I'm like, oh, God, help me. Yeah, and it just kind of dropped into, okay, wait. And I literally sat back, took a breath, and then I said, you got to help me to understand. What are you afraid of? Yeah, that was a revelation moment. Because people act, fear is a great motivator in life. And often when you get people, they are freaking out, they're angry, they're attacking you, they're actually afraid. And if you can work out what they're afraid of, that's true in Somewhere I have a marriage sermon, and it's I can't remember who, what author he coined it. He called it the fear dance. A lot of marriage conflict is actually just fear based. Is a husband or a wife, they're saying, but what they're saying is actually a revelation. They're afraid of something. I'm afraid you're going to leave me. I'm afraid you're going to disrespect me. I'm afraid, you know, there's, and if you can learn that, that's a profound moment. Yes, I pray. Because to me, counseling needs to be supernatural. It's not just, that's why I often pray for people in counseling. Because at the end of the day, it's not just me saying something, I've never heard that before. I need God to get involved. So I need God to get involved with them, but I need, that's why I pray for wisdom. I take that very seriously. So yeah, if you pray, that's what you really want, is you want God to help you, give you supernatural favor.
So like you were saying, you had that revelation in the middle of that moment of anger.
Yeah.
If you're in the middle of a moment of anger and you have a revelation that you are in that state, you're like, whoa, my toes are up against the edge of the cliff here, I'm ready to jump. You don't always have that moment, I would think, to stop and pray in the middle of that conversation. If you realize you're in that state of anger, but you don't have the revelation of, wait, you know, what are we doing? How do you process that? What exactly is your next step? I mean, you realize you're angry, but now you're like, well, wait, I've gone far. How do you backpedal that?
Well, the most common is to humble your pride. Let me give you a tip. Any guys that you're not married yet or you are married, don't say everything that comes in your head. That'll save you a lot of... I never regret the things I don't say. So I often regret things I do say. So number one, let's back up. Colby, the real issue is this is why you need a relationship with God. Okay, so some of you, any of you that come to morning prayer and you come to prayer before church, you're ahead of the game. Because you are the most likely candidate that God can speak to you. Right? It's the old thing. The closer you are to God, the easier it is. Right? It's the old illustration. Is husbands and wives play this. For some reason, my wife wants to talk to me when I'm on the other end of the house in the closet. And I hear, what? Any of you do this? What? Okay. One of us has to come closer. Okay. If you start with, and then they come in the room, what is it? Oh, I just was saying, you know. So that's the starting point. The second thing is it's just humbling your pride. Often I feel like saying, so I'm gonna deliberately stop. Part of that, you get in a cycle, it's not an easy thing to do because it's not like the moment you stop that your spouse says, okay, I'm gonna stop too. Often, I'm going to stop, and I go, and you're dumb and ugly. So it's difficult. But, you know, but personally, my marriage changed. I used to go round and round and round and fight with my wife over the always and never. Right? You always. Oh, what about last Tuesday? You never. Oh, Monday the 17th on. Dumb. And we never went anywhere. And so finally, in the middle of a fight, I was getting upset, and I said, I can keep doing this till I die. All right. I am going to keep my mouth shut. Please help me to understand what you're saying, even if you're not saying it right. Right? Couples play this. It's like, does my face go like that when I do? My face doesn't go like, is that how my voice goes? Right? Those are dumb. They're dumb. We were concentrating on the voice, the face, the historical data. And I said, okay, no. I am going to listen, even if you said it with a face I didn't like, but is there some truth? What's the message? That's the question you got to ask. What's the message here? Oh, I'm making you feel unloved. That's the message. I get it. So but most often you just got to stop. For some people, it's literally stop, take a breath, you know, and humble your pride. That's a big part of it. Not that any of you would ever have pride. That was only me. Thinking about it. Good. Good questions, guys. Amazing. I am amazed when I read the Bible is at how, what a broad cross-section of practical issues the Bible covers. So, very good. There's a lesson. Thanks, guys.